You want to see the text message my little sister Celine sent me last night? Here it is. OMG, Kevin Nash, WTF, thought he was dead, LOL. The funny thing is, Celine is normally wrong. It's just your career that's dead, right?
We have a new WWE champion, and no, his name is not John Cena, CM Punk, or Rey Mysterio. In fact, Alberto Del Rio is the new champion. And this is a new episode of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, episode 174. In fact, here on SEScoops.com, yet another rare weekday edition. There is a lot of news to talk about, and I thought about waiting until the weekend, and I just said, you know what? I can't wait until Sunday. I've got a lot to get off my chest. A lot's going on. A lot's happened. A lot more, I'm sure, is going to happen. But here we are, another bonus episode, 174. It is Tuesday, August 16th, 2011. I am the Solemn Monster. And for those of you who may have missed, perhaps, some of the recent shows, episode 172, I did during the week last week, episode 173, our normal show, which was posted on Sunday. Check those shows out if you haven't already done so. If we have any new listeners, thanks for checking out the podcast. Really appreciate it. And I suppose that we should start with SummerSlam, the 24th annual edition, or so we were told, of SummerSlam, which really has become, in many ways, the third biggest pay-per-view of the year for WWE. WrestleMania, of course, being number one. Royal Rumble, I think, is still ranked by many people as being number two. I guess you can go either way. Some people might think SummerSlam is number two. Regardless, this SummerSlam for 2011 is going to go down, in my opinion, as a good show overall, largely due to the two championship matches that we had in the main event. It was not, however, a good night for my predictions, although I believe I did say that Del Rio would likely cash in his briefcase, so at least I got that one right. Now, let's just start with this. Up until about an hour or two before the pay-per-view on Sunday, Jim Ross was of the impression that he would be calling the action with Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole. He went on Twitter earlier in the day. He said he was really excited. He was looking forward to the show. It was going to be him, King, and Cole at the announce booth. And then they made a game-time decision to put Booker T on the show, which was, you know, fine. If you want to put Booker on the show, I'm not a big fan of Booker T, but fine. But they put Booker T on the show at the expense of Jim Ross. So they bumped JR off of SummerSlam to do what, you might ask? Well, to keep him backstage to handle Twitter duties. That's right, Jim Ross basically was WWE's Twitter bitch on Sunday night. If ever there was a more miscast person for a role, on this night it was Jim Ross. He had the best play-by-play announcer being fucked over at the last minute, kept off the air handling Twitter updates. So anyway, this may have been the peak of Vince McMahon's retardation on full display at this pay-per-view. I mean, seriously, what is wrong with that man? I don't know what his problem is. But to be fair, Booker was more than tolerable on this show. I found him a lot of times recently to be very grating on the nerves. Not so much on this show. He was okay. Still not great, but not horrible either. Just a few quick notes. I'll do a quick run-through of all the matches, just really quick. Just a few other notes. I thought using Jimmy Hart in that backstage skit with R-Truth for the Little Jimmy line was actually pretty genius. Made me laugh. And I will say this about Jimmy Hart. The man looks only slightly older, but otherwise he is virtually the exact same as he looked 25 years ago. How is that possible? I gotta get a hold of him soon, find out what his secret is. And one other note that really pissed me off watching this show. There should never be that many commercials during a pay-per-view. One or two for the main sponsor, fine. I get that. No problem. But, I mean, it felt like an episode of Raw at times. I mean, people don't want to pay $45 to watch commercials. They got to lay off the commercials quickly. Get rid of that. That is not something that belongs on a pay-per-view show. Now, a lot of talk before the show. I think I even talked about it on the last show, maybe the show before that when I did the SummerSlam predictions, that they had announced four matches. And ultimately, before they went to the air, they actually announced the fifth match, which was the Daniel Bryan against Wade Barrett match. A lot of guys left off this pay-per-view going into Sunday. The Miz didn't have a match. Rey Mysterio, who was hurt, didn't have a match. R-Truth, John Morrison, Alberto Del Rio, Mr. Money in the Bank himself. And so what they basically did was they stuck all of the mid-card guys without a match in a six-man tag to open the pay-per-view. So it was Alberto Del Rio, The Miz, and R-Truth against Kofi Kingston, John Morrison, and Rey Mysterio. Rey pinned Truth at the end here to pick up the victory. Whole point is to get people excited for the show. That's the whole point of an opening contest, and they did that here. I thought it was a pretty good match. It served its purpose. It was fine. Kofi and Morrison did most of the work since Rey's knee is hurt again. No word on how serious the injury is or if he's going to need surgery, but it's the same knee that's been giving Rey problems now for a couple of years. And even on Raw Monday night, not moving too good. Doing his best. Guy's gutting it out, but he did very minimal work in this match. He got the pin at the end on Truth and didn't do much more than that. But again, fine match, nothing more. There was a CM Punk Stephanie McMahon backstage skit here that I wanted to mention because it was actually pretty good, which is a rarity for these types of segments. You had Punk backstage with John Laurinaitis, the executive vice president of talent relations. Just ask him, he'll tell you. He wanted an apology from Punk for what happened on Raw the previous week. Punk proceeded to deliver the most sarcastic apology ever seen by modern men. Turns around, Stephanie McMahon is there, wished him luck in his match against John Cena. Punk tells her to wish her husband and her father luck. And Stephanie says that she spoke to both of them. They wish luck to Punk and Cena. But what would she know? She's Vince's clueless daughter, she said. And Punk corrected her and says he actually said idiotic. If you go back to that original promo, thought that was pretty funny. Steph offered her hand for a handshake. Punk declined, saying he didn't know where that hand had been. This was all rather amusing as far as backstage segments go. Sheamus and Mark Henry, Battle of the Big Men. I predicted that there would be some sort of indecisive or fuck finish in this match, and technically I was wrong, but given the actual finish of the match, I don't think I was too far off. It wasn't as though one man beat the other man in any sort of dominant fashion or anything like that, nor should it have been. Again, I think the door is open for at least one more match. You didn't have to beat one guy decisively in this match. I figured there would be some sort of double count out, double draw, DQ type of deal. And they kind of went in that direction. They had a big man match, pretty much what you would expect. Not bad, especially for a Mark Henry match. And the finish came when Sheamus delivered a brogue kick, which sadly did not take Mark Henry's head off, like it did that dummy on Conan O'Brien's show last week. But it did knock Henry out of the ring to the floor. Sheamus went out after him, got rammed into the steel post for his troubles, and then he got sent through the barricade in a pretty cool spot. And Henry was able to get back into the ring. Sheamus could not beat the 10 count, so he gets counted out. Mark Henry is your winner. So the big Mark Henry push continues. And Sheamus isn't really hurt by the loss. Again, it's not as though Henry pinned him in the middle of the ring with the World's Strongest Slam, put his leg in a chair and broke his ankle like he did to the Kane in the Big Show and Kozlov. So this was fine. Speaking of fine, believe it or not, the Divas Championship match, Kelly Kelly and Beth Phoenix, I thought they had a pretty good match. Believe it or not, especially by Kelly Kelly standards. They gave them a couple of minutes, which you figured, since it wasn't a Raw match, it was on pay-per-view. I don't know what the actual length was. I'd say they probably went about, they probably went a good 5 or 6 minutes, if I had a guess. No major fuck-ups, certainly nothing cringeworthy here. This was fine. I mean, it wasn't the finish I would have gone with. Kelly wins with a roll-up, retains her title. I was sure that Beth was going to take the victory here. As our buddy Nick said on Facebook a couple days ago, perhaps they're saving Beth's title win for the Night of Champions pay-per-view in Buffalo. Obviously, all championship matches on that show. Kelly's going to have to defend her title. So we'll see. But this was actually surprisingly, shockingly pretty good. I shouldn't say shockingly. We know Beth Phoenix is a good worker. Kelly Kelly, of course, well, she's pretty. That's all I'll say about that. Daniel Bryan, Wade Barrett had a really good match. There were some boring chants early on, which you can blame squarely on Michael fucking Cole's commentary. Bryan is far from boring, but when you have your lead announcer talk about how boring and nerdy he is week in and week out, people are bound to start believing it, and that's kind of what we started seeing in this match, which really, I mean, it was really depressing. Because Daniel Bryan, when I think of him, say what you want to, he actually has a pretty damn entertaining personality. He's actually pretty damn charismatic, even if it doesn't always come across that way on TV. If you watch the Wrestling Road Diaries, the Colt Cabana documentary, which basically follows Colt, Daniel Bryan, and one other person around on the indie circuit, you just watch that movie and you'll see a ton of personality oozing out of Bryan Danielson. But, you know, for Michael Cole to call him boring all the time, it's just ridiculous. As a matter of fact, Cole actually spent a good part of this match calling Bryan names as well. And aside from one point in the match, it was right after Daniel Bryan locked in a guillotine choke on Barrett. And Wade Barrett escaped. And Cole actually admitted at that point that Bryan was dangerous with his submissions. Aside from that, every word out of this guy's mouth was, he's a nerd, he's a dork, he's an idiot, you know, waiting until WrestleMania to cash in his briefcase, what's wrong with him? I can see where Vince McMahon might think that by having Cole, you know, being the heel that he is, trash Daniel Bryan week in and week out, that he's actually getting him over in some weird way, but it ain't working. It's not working out the way that he had planned, if that is in fact what he had in mind. But anyway, Wade Barrett wins clean with a wasteland. No big deal, you know. Two good workers, good match. Bryan's got the briefcase, so I figure maybe they think he's bulletproof. They can beat him over and over and over again. Eventually, he's going to get his title match anyway. So then we have the no-holds-barred match for the World Heavyweight Championship. First of all, it was great to see Edge. Edge makes an appearance. Christian introduces him as his big surprise. I thought perhaps it might be somebody like Brodus Clay coming back, perhaps to be a bodyguard for Christian, but it was Edge. And I mentioned that, actually, on the last sound-off, that Edge was supposed to be at SummerSlam, and sure enough, there he was, came out looking pretty good, if not a little bit slimmer. Good for him. And basically, his appearance really didn't serve much of a purpose, unless it was just to take Christian off his game. Perhaps Christian will blame Edge for his loss in some way, but basically, Edge just came out, said, listen, you're my best friend no matter what, but you're a whining, complaining little bitch, and threw down the microphone and walked to the back, and that was it. That was the last time we saw Edge on this pay-per-view. Orton and Christian are, as far as I'm concerned, 5-for-5 now this year in excellent singles matches. This had more plunder and garbage and weapons, which, you know, I could have done without, but I guess they felt they needed the bells and whistles to differentiate this match from all the other ones they've been having. These guys just have such great chemistry together. It's just a pleasure to watch the two of them in the ring. I can't even get that mad if they do another match at the next pay-per-view. I mean, I admit, it would be ridiculous. It would be complete overkill. These guys have been having singles matches every month since basically the very end of April, beginning of May, whatever that first match was on TV. Is it overkill? Sure. But you know what? You're guaranteed to get great matches every single time out. This was my favorite match on the entire pay-per-view, was the World Heavyweight title match. And according to Jim Ross, who of course was doing Twitter duties during this show, JR said that all the boys in the back were going crazy for this match too. It's not hard to see why. They had a great fucking match, these two. Orton wins the title back, unfortunately. That's kind of the one mark on this match. I don't see the purpose in putting the belt back on Orton after he just lost it less than a month earlier. I think the whole thing is ridiculous. Why not let Christian run a little bit longer with it while Randy chases? You know, you can't have Randy just get screwed over again in this match and then feud with Mark Henry for one pay-per-view match, and at the same time, Christian can go and defend the title against someone fresh and actually beat that person to make himself a little bit stronger. That way, when Orton takes care of Henry, and you know that's going to be the outcome of that feud, you can reunite him and Christian for the blow-off match and then give him the title back then. I don't know. I don't know what the need was to rush the belt off Christian so quickly. But hey, you know what? Christian got almost a full 4 weeks with the championship, which is more than the, technically 2 days he had the very first time. So anyway, I still say Brodus Clay would make a good bodyguard for Christian. But yeah, these two guys took some abuse in this match. Randy Orton got cut up a little bit on his, he sliced his thumb open. He took a shellac, and Christian took a beating too. Those kendo stick shots, believe me, they don't feel too good. And the finish was Orton catching Christian in midair, very reminiscent of their very first match, only this time when he delivered the RKO. Christian, unfortunately, landed face first on the ring steps, which were in the ring. Great spot. Crowd went crazy. This match rocked. So then we had John Cena and CM Punk to determine the undisputed WWE champion, Triple H, as the guest referee. Now, was this at the level of their Money in the Bank match last month? No. Was the crowd in Los Angeles as rowdy as they were in Chicago? No. But I don't think anybody expected they would be. I mean, they were still hot for this match as it wore on. And as I predicted, Triple H called it right down the middle. No funny business except for that one spot where both guys were about to be counted out and Triple H ran outside and basically just threw both of them back in the ring. He wanted to see a winner. Nothing wrong with that. Cena shocked me when he delivered that Mr. Perfect-esque dropkick to the face towards the end of the match. That was perhaps the most amazing thing of the entire show, actually, was that John Cena dropkick. So kudos to him for that. I loved the loud Randy Savage chants from the crowd in L.A. after Punk delivered the top rope elbow drop. I thought that was really cool, really classy. Really loud, too. Lots of loud Randy Savage chants after that. And, you know, again, they had a really, really good match. It wasn't as long. It wasn't as good, in my opinion, as the Money in the Bank match. The Money in the Bank match was over 30 minutes. You know, they had some, I guess, botches, if you want to call it that, at the beginning. But other than that, the match they had last month was virtually flawless. I don't even remember the very beginning of that match. You know, people don't remember the beginning, they remember the end. And Money in the Bank was fantastic. The SummerSlam match was a little bit shorter. Still a very long match. I think it went like 24, 25 minutes. A little clunky early on. But again, as it wore on, just like in Chicago last month, these guys, they know how to turn it up. The crowd got into it. Triple H was just kind of, you know, he didn't overshadow these two guys in any way. He was just kind of there, which is fine. And I thought they had a really good match. And even though it wasn't a clean win, let this fact not be lost on us that CM Punk now has defeated John Cena on two consecutive pay-per-views via pinfall. I mean, I'm not sure that's ever happened before. It's like Hulk Hogan getting pinned at WrestleMania. Only two men in history can stake claim to that accomplishment. The Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 6 and The Rock at WrestleMania 18, ironically, both in the same building. Now, this may not be Hogan at Mania, but it's still a pretty big deal. By modern-day standards, we know Cena is Superman, and again, Punk beat him twice in a row on pay-per-view. That to me, tells me that Punk, if nothing else comes out of this storyline, you could talk about how they fucked it up, it's, you know, cooled off, it's not what it could have been. I agree with all that, it's not what it could have been, but Punk's a made man now, as far as I'm concerned. He has elevated his game to a point where I think it'll be very difficult for them to let Punk or push Punk back down to the mid-card. He's just too good in his role. He's selling a shitload of t-shirts right now. He's making money. He's tremendous on the microphone. He's tremendous in the ring. And in my opinion, he can help elevate the game of whoever he's in the ring with, including John Cena. John Cena's not a great wrestler, but when he's in there with somebody like Punk, you know, the guy turns it up. He has great matches. That's the beauty of having somebody like CM Punk as a top guy on your roster. Anyway, so the finish here was CM Punk delivered the second go to sleep in this match. Nailed Cena right in the face. Went for the pinfall. Triple H drops down to count. Now, Cena clearly got his leg on the bottom rope. Triple H pretended not to see it. Counted the fall anyway. Punk celebrates. And the crowd is obviously waiting for something to happen. Cena has left at this point. He argued with Triple H a little bit. And then he stormed off, and that was it. You know, if I were John Cena, perhaps I would have put up a bit more of a fight, but whatever. So anyway, the crowd is obviously waiting for something to happen. It did feel like a little bit of an anticlimactic way to go off the air, if that was going to be it. And that was not it. You know, I thought for sure that Punk was eating a pedigree at this point, but nope. Triple H just shakes his hand and walks off, and then who should come out from the crowd to attack CM Punk? Why, none other than Kevin Nash. The same Kevin Nash who wrestled at the Insane Clown Posse's Gathering of the Juggalos at 3 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, who then pops up during the SummerSlam main event on Sunday. Truly the smartest man in wrestling, ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Nash. It really is amazing how Kevin Nash, of all people, manages to get himself inserted into what has been, for all intents and purposes, the hottest storyline in pro wrestling. Now, granted, the angle is nowhere near as hot as it was a month ago, but still, it's the biggest storyline going on today, regardless, in any of the major promotions. It's the whole CM Punk against the establishment, Punk and Cena, and here's Kevin Nash somehow managing to insert himself into this storyline. So, Nash comes out of the crowd, he clotheslines CM Punk, and then he just destroys the poor guy with a jackknife powerbomb before disappearing. As much as a 6'11" man can disappear, back into the crowd. At this point, Triple H comes back to ringside. He has this befuddled expression on his face. Alberto Del Rio runs down with the briefcase, cashes in, delivers an enziguri to the back of the head, 1, 2, 3, and Del Rio is finally, after all these months, and pushing it back, and pushing it back, and pushing it back, he is finally the new WWE champion. 1 year to the week that he made his TV debut on SmackDown, Del Rio is champion. I believe the first Mexican-born champion in WWE history, which I don't think they made mention of a single time on Raw Monday night, which is odd to me because when Sheamus won the title, all we kept hearing about, including even today, all we hear about is Sheamus, the first ever Irish-born WWE champion. Maybe I missed it. I don't think they made reference to Del Rio being the first Mexican-born champion at all on Sunday or Monday, but perhaps I missed it. So, Eddie Guerrero was Mexican-American, but Del Rio was actually born across the border. So, I must say, though, I do still mark out, I will say this, I mark out for Kevin Nash's powerbomb. I think I've said this before on the show, but it bears repeating. We need more powerbombs on TV. It seems like a move that very rarely, or you know, every now and then you'll see a small guy use it, and it's just not the same. There's something to be said for having a big, giant guy who just goes in there and kicks ass and just hoists somebody in the air and just tosses them and smashes them down into the canvas. It's such a simple, basic move. And Nash, for his part, pulled it off perfectly. And there you go. So, yes, more power bombs on TV. I am a big advocate for that. So, we have a WWE pay-per-view going off the air for the second consecutive month, leaving us with more questions than answers, and I'm okay with that. It's not like TNA. I hate to pick on TNA, but I will anyway. It's not like TNA where a pay-per-view exists merely as a mechanism to promote the free TV show. You know, we got some great long wrestling matches at SummerSlam, and we got a new champion to boot, so it was a newsworthy show, and now we have to watch Raw to find out, why did Kevin Nash attack CM Punk? Was he secretly doing the dirty work for Triple H? What will John Cena's reaction be to Triple H's botched call at the finish? So I like that. I like the way they left the pay-per-view with some air of mystery. And, again, would I have booked it this way? Fantasy booking, of course, we all do it. Not necessarily. But I will say, when Nash showed up, I was shocked. I certainly was. Would I have taken the title off Punk and put it on Del Rio right now? Probably not. I know why they did it. They have this big tour of Mexico coming up, which is just comical to me because it's not as though WWE is going to go on this Mexican tour in a month and not draw. They're going to go down to Mexico. They're going to sell out. They're going to make $1 million. Del Rio's going to be on the show. What difference does it make whether or not he's champion? I guess, to him it's a big deal. Maybe some of his fans, his family or whatever. But to me, when you have such a hot angle, which is not as hot as it used to be at this point, but it was pretty hot. And Punk was over, and Cena and Punk, there's still a lot left to do between those two guys. You call an audible. Del Rio's title reign has already been pushed back at least 6 months. Push it back another 3 or 4 months. It's not going to make that big of a deal. But they had a plan. They stuck to it. Del Rio is champion. Overall, a good show. Not a great show. It certainly does not rank in the top five, or probably not even the top 10, quite frankly, of all-time SummerSlam shows. But it was still a pretty good show. So then we move on to Monday Night Raw, which emanated last night from San Diego, 619, hometown of Rey Mysterio, who, of course, was getting a WWE Championship match, bum knee and all. Mysterio and Del Rio, your main event. I got a lot of thoughts about this show, and this is a big part of why I couldn't wait until the weekend to do a podcast. I just said there's too many thoughts floating around in my head right now. Let's just get it all out. And I don't want people to think that I hated this show. In fact, I think on the whole, Raw last night was actually good. It was a good show, which is bizarre because of how passionately I hated the things that I didn't like. Now, first, let us not forget that in the very first promo that CM Punk did all those weeks ago, he said that as bad as Vince McMahon is, if he died, the company would just be taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law. So in storyline, do you really think that Triple H has forgotten that? I mean, now that he's in charge, it's obvious that he's doing everything in his power to fuck with CM Punk, and his plot will ultimately be revealed, which will culminate in this long-talked-about heel turn that we've been hearing about for Triple H for some time. In my opinion, that's where the storyline is going. I don't know that for a fact. I could be wrong. Everybody's got a theory. That's where I think this is headed. And I'm fine with that, because it makes sense, and it's probably the best role for Triple H if he's going to be feuding with CM Punk, who people do not want to boo. You know, if you're going to do that feud, if it's going to lead to a match, maybe it's Survivor Series or WrestleMania or whatever, Triple H, I mean, to have two baby faces doesn't make sense. Triple H should be the heel, CM Punk should be the face, not the other way around. So let me start with the good, okay, because there was some good on this show, and I don't want to get all negative right off the bat. I'll get to that in a second. Here's the good stuff I liked on Raw Monday night. John Morrison and R-Truth had another match. This time it was False Count Anywhere. Although, if you listen to John Morrison's inset promo before the match, you would think that this was the first time that he and Truth have touched since Morrison came back from his neck injury. He talked about how he hadn't gotten his hands on Truth yet, which was just a completely ridiculous thing to say. I mean, he got beat clean last week one-on-one against R-Truth, and they were even in the same match at SummerSlam 24 hours earlier, wrestling inside the Staples Center. So, that was kind of a dumb statement. But that aside, this was a good match with a great finish. I love the finish to this match. Morrison suplexed Truth at the end of the match. They were outside the ring, False Count Anywhere. He suplexed Truth onto a chair on the outside that was open, so Truth was seated, and then Morrison followed up with a wicked running knee to the face. I mean, he just clocked this poor bastard right in the face, knocked him over, chair and all, pinned him on the outside, 1-2-3. Really cool finish. Morrison was selling his neck afterwards, or at least I hope he was selling. Skipping ahead to the main event, I really like the main event. Alberto Del Rio defending the championship against Rey Mysterio. I think the two of them had a good match in the main event. Rey, even on one bad leg, is still light years better than most people on the roster. He did an acai moonsault in this match. He was moving around, not quite as quickly as he can or he has recently, because again, he is hurt, but he did everything he could. And I liked the near falls at the end of this match. The finish was really good. Rey hit the 619, came off the top with a big splash. Del Rio got his knees up, cradled Rey for the small package, 1-2-3. It was important that Alberto get a clean win in his first title defense to dispel this belief in storyline that he doesn't deserve to be the champion because of the way he cashed in. So giving him a win without interference by Ricardo or Cena or Punk or Nash or Triple H or anybody was the way to go. I like the way that they did this. And again, Del Rio now looks a little bit stronger than he did the day before. Then we had John Cena run down to the ring, his only appearance on the show, so how can I not put this in the good category? Huge plus. Comes down to save Mysterio from Del Rio's post-match attack, Del Rio working on Mysterio's arm, which could very well turn out to be a storyline excuse for his absence if this injury turns out to be a serious one, and he needs knee surgery. And I don't know at this point whether he does, but if he does, they can use the arm injury from Del Rio as a cover excuse. So Cena came down, he cut a promo that may well have been his best of the entire year because he wasn't smirking, he wasn't smiling, he didn't crack any stupid corny jokes. He was serious, he was to the point, and he was pissed off about what happened the night before. Now, he wasn't pissed off that he got screwed over by Triple H, mind you, which I think you or I would have been pretty upset about that. He was pissed at the way that Del Rio won the title. Which begs the question, why does John Cena in the same promo talk up CM Punk so much about how much he respects him and this and that, when Punk cashed in the briefcase on two separate occasions? He cashed in the briefcase twice in his career in the same exact way that Del Rio did. I don't know. But anyway, for some reason, Cena was, he was angry. And why not? I mean, he was, remember, John Cena was the first person to be a victim, to be victimized by the Money in the Bank briefcase. Edge, of course, won the first briefcase back in 05. And at that New Year's Revolution pay-per-view in January of 06, Cena had gotten done. He was beaten and bloodied after an Elimination Chamber match, and Edge came down to the ring with Lita, speared him, 1-2-3. Cena lost the championship on a cash-in by Edge. And then later that same year, Rob Van Dam cashed in. Now, granted, he didn't cash in unexpectedly. You know, Van Dam was the first person to cash in advance, as many of you pointed out. I made the mistake once of saying that I think nobody has done that yet. In fact, RVD did it in 06. And so, yet another cash-in that Cena, unfortunately, was on the losing end of. He lost the WWE Championship at One Night Stand that year to Rob Van Dam because of that damn briefcase. So, you know, John Cena has every reason, quite frankly, to hate that briefcase. And, you know, a great main event at SummerSlam between him and Punk was marred not only by a bad ref call, but by another Money in the Bank cash-in. So I can understand why he hates that briefcase with such vigor and passion. The one nitpick I will mention, when Cena was cutting his promo, he tells Alberto, "Someday you're going to have to defend that title." What? Did he not just get done successfully defending the title against Rey Mysterio? I'll just assume that Cena meant defend it against him. And defend it against Cena, he will. Of course, Cena gets the next title shot. Of course he does. In storyline, it actually does make sense, being that Cena's foot was on the rope at the pay-per-view, but still. I mean, just the idea that John Cena is once again number one contender, it is what it is. So, then we have CM Punk and Kevin Nash. And I'm putting Punk and Nash in the good column and the bad column. What did I like about it? It kept my attention, and it was entertaining as hell, that's for sure. I mean, really, that's all you can ask for out of a segment. Now, to be fair, if TNA did that same promo on TV, and they have many, many, many times, people would be jumping all over them. And when I made that comment on Twitter during the live show, I was doing some live blogging during Raw. So if you're not on following me on Twitter, I tend to do that from time to time. It's fun. There's some back and forth with people. Twitter.com/Solomonster. Follow me on there. But as I was doing that, I made that comment, and people automatically assumed I was bashing the segment. But I wasn't. I was merely making a statement of fact. TNA did it so often that it lost its value after the sixth or seventh time. You know, WWE has to be careful not to fall into the same trap. Now, Nash came to the ring for the segment. He said Triple H was a longtime friend of his. He was the godfather of his son. He said that he got a text message from a friend at SummerSlam saying, "Hey, big man, no matter what happens in the main event, stick the winner after the match," whatever that means. So Nash said that Triple H now is claiming he doesn't know anything about that text message. First of all, got a text from a friend. That's what he said. He got a text from a friend, and now there's debate over who this friend was. Does Nash not have names in his address book on his phone? Anyway, Punk comes out, says that he doesn't believe Nash. Well, realistically, with Nash's track record, I don't see why anybody would believe a word out of Kevin Nash's mouth. So Nash asks Punk if he wants to see the text. Punk comes back, and instead he reads the text message on his own phone from his little sister, who thought that Nash was dead, which was easily the best line of the entire show. Punk said that Nash isn't dead, only his career is, and the crowd went, ooh, so that got a nice reaction. You know, watching Punk and Nash play off each other was kind of surreal. I mean, who among us would have thought, I mean, seriously, who would have predicted just 1 month ago that this verbal duel between CM Punk and Kevin Nash would actually be a reality? Now, for my money, Punk mopped the floor with Nash during the segment and made him look stupid, which made me smile. The crowd was fully behind Punk. He looked like a badass, quite frankly, when he started coming down to the ring and pitching for a fight. Then, of course, the security goons blocked him from coming to the ring. Nash stood there with his arms crossed in the middle of the ring like an idiot. It was obvious that a majority of the fans had no idea what these guys were talking about when they were shooting on each other, but I did. But therein also lies the problem, which gives me a chance to switch over now to the bad category. Of course, we're doing the good, the bad, and the ugly. Time to move on to the bad. CM Punk is getting the biggest push of his career. He is arguably already a bona fide main event star. He's part of a hot angle. So you bring Kevin Nash into it. You know, when Nash started talking about 1996 and how wrestlers wouldn't have guaranteed money if it wasn't for him and Scott Hall paving the way, all I could think was, who gives a shit? I mean, seriously, I want everybody listening to this right now to answer a simple question for me and be completely honest. Be completely honest. How many of you, honestly, care at all about who is responsible for guaranteed money and the fact that guys now make guaranteed money? Who cares? Why should we give a shit about any of that? Let the wrestlers care about that. Why should the fans care? And worse, you've got Nash referring to Punk as a short order cook who needs a shower and needs to hit the weights? Really? We're going to go back to having the legends now mocking the younger guys for not having jacked up freakish physiques. It's like Randy Orton and Vince McMahon's neck like a stack of dimes line all over again, or DX ribbing Chris Masters on TV about being the incredible shrinking man. Plus, you've got Nash stumbling over his words here, saying that Punk has only been in two main events in his life. Hello? Was Punk not headlining SummerSlam two years ago? He beat Jeff Hardy in a TLC match to win the World Heavyweight title. Or headlining a pay-per-view the month after that against The Undertaker, of all people, and winning. I mean, at least pretend like you have some respect for the guy you're in the ring working with. You know, these comments, unlike the ones that Nash made when he first came out for the segment, which sounded completely rehearsed, scripted, fake, phony. When that promo started, when Nash walked to the ring with no music, which, again, I thought was kind of stupid. You know, play the guy's music, let him get a nice little pop. He comes to the ring, he starts cutting this typical scripted WWE soap opera promo. You can just tell he's not comfortable doing it. Because Nash, if you've ever seen Kevin Nash in his natural habitat, go back and watch when he was, you know, cutting promos on Nitro. Not that he was such a fantastic promo guy, but when Nash went out there, it was obvious he wasn't out there with a script. Sometimes he would lose track and he would just kind of go off on a tangent, but he's actually a pretty good, pretty smooth talker. He was anything but that in this segment when it first started. He got better. He got a little more comfortable when he was going back and forth with Punk, but at the beginning, he was fucking terrible. And that shocked me because it was like, I actually felt bad. I was like, you know, Nash is better. Say what you want to about the guy, but on the microphone, he's better than this. And, you know, he's got to read this stupid crap. You know, I was invited to SummerSlam. I got a text message. Like, just let him speak. Just let him go out there, give him some bullet points, and let him talk like a normal person. So stupid. So, anyway, as the segment went on and he's going back and forth with Punk, the comments that he was making, they felt real. Like, they just told him at that point, once you get past all the scripted bullshit and Punk comes out, just go out there and just start shooting on each other. That's what it felt like to me. And that's what Nash came up with. Why? Because this is what he really feels in his heart. I truly believe that. And to me, of all the stupid shit that he said in the segment, and I'm not saying all of it was untrue. I mean, yes, you know, the NWO angle in 96, it was a hot angle. And a lot of the shit that went down, perhaps, you know, he did pave the way for better contracts for people. That may well be true. You know, that may well be true. And I don't hate Kevin Nash, but it's the greatest example of why Nash, a man that has been in the wrestling business for over 20 years, just like Punk said, does not have clue number one about how to make money. I mean, it's not like we didn't already know that from the WCW days and the Goldberg stuff and his short-lived reign as Booker. But this was more of a confirmation of what we already knew. So, does this lead to an actual match now between Nash and Punk? I mean, I don't see how that benefits anybody. Nash can barely move. Punk is great, but he ain't no miracle worker. I mean, Kevin Nash to me is a guy that I feel like if I met him in real life, and I never have, but I feel like if I met him in real life, I would want to have a beer with him and crack jokes, and we'd get along really well. But if I had to work with him, and I wasn't one of his buddies, if I wasn't in his little clique, I would be completely miserable. That's the sense that I get. So, anyway, between this and my rant on Nash about 3 weeks ago, when he was on that Legends Roundtable spewing some magnificent bullshit, I think I've given the man enough airtime for now. Let's move on here. We had The Miz, seemingly the man without anything. I was going to say the man without a home, the man without a feud. He comes out, he does this stupid segment where he's got to go back and forth with Jared from Subway, who's in the front row. Fucking Jared. I'm just begging somebody to take this guy out. So Miz does this stupid product placement where he goes over and he grabs a sandwich out of Jared's hand. Jared just walks around with fucking footlong Subway sandwiches. This guy lost all this weight, and yet he walks around with these gigantic Subway sandwiches everywhere he goes. So Miz steals the sandwich like Santino once did on Raw. Remember, he stole Jerry Lawler's sandwich once. At least that was funny. And he goes, "Oh, I can be a better spokesperson for Subway than you ever could be." And he does a pretty good job. He pimps their new chicken sandwich or whatever the hell it is. And I love Subway. I eat Subway a couple times a week. Doesn't mean I want to sit through stupid shit like this on Raw. And really, this is the best you could come up with for The Miz. My gut tells me this. My gut tells me that they had a feud. They had a storyline. They had something planned with him and Rey Mysterio. I know they had a match at SummerSlam planned, and they couldn't do a one-on-one match because of Rey's injury. What else would Miz be doing right now were he not feuding with Rey Mysterio? I mean, the guy has nothing. That's the only thing he did on this show. He came out, he cut a promo for a new Subway sandwich, and he left. Not before taking a few bites of the sandwich, of course. That was it. And I thought to myself, God, if I were booking Raw, if I were the COO or the anonymous Raw GM, which apparently is not dead yet because the anonymous Raw GM podium is still there, even though he has not dinged in for several weeks now. Or she, I should say. But I thought to myself, if I were in charge, who would I put Miz with? And I couldn't come up with anything right away. You've got a couple of guys like Kofi Kingston and Evan Bourne. We've seen that already, though. And to me, it wouldn't do anything to elevate Miz as much as it would bring him down a couple of notches, which they really can't afford to do. They did a pretty good job, not a great job, but, Miz is looked at by some people as a main event star. Other people look at him not as a main eventer, but as an upper mid-carder, and whatever, that's fine. They need more stars. You can't break this guy down after you've built him up, but you got to do something with him. And on Raw, quite frankly, I don't think there's anything left for him to do. Part of me is almost, in favor of moving him over to SmackDown. SmackDown, God knows SmackDown can use more heels. We've seen Randy Orton and Miz already. It's been done to death, but perhaps a change of scenery would do him some good. I mean, he's not going to feud with Cena again. Miz and Punk, I suppose that's a direction they could go in. Apparently they're not right now. And if they're not doing Miz and Punk, then what are you going to do? Like I said, you're not going to do Cena. You're not going to do Miz and Alex Riley. I mean, there are very few options left for him on the Raw brand. Miz and Del Rio, well, not really, because Miz is a heel. They're not turning him babyface, not yet. So I really don't know what you do with him. Perhaps some of you can write in with some suggestions. I still think moving him to SmackDown might be the best idea. And then we have the ugly on this show. And boy, I've been doing the good, bad, and ugly reviews for Raw now. I've been doing this format for a couple of weeks. And some shows are good. Some shows really don't have anything ugly in particular. This show did. This might be the worst of it on any episode of Raw that I've seen all year. We had truly what may have been the worst segment on Raw of the entire year on this show. And perhaps some people think I'm exaggerating. I don't think I am. I don't think I am. Jack Swagger had a match with Alex Riley. Now, you may not remember that they had a match because of all the bickering that was taking place on commentary. None of it revolved around the match itself. We had five people at the announce table. We had Cole, Lawler, JR, and they were joined by Dolph Ziggler and Vicky Guerrero, who spent the duration of the match sniping at one another like a married couple. I mean, there were so many burials on commentary during this segment. I'm not sure there's any space left in the graveyard. There's no more room to put any more bodies. That's how many people were buried 6 feet under on this show. I may actually start a new feature when I do these Raw reviews each week, starting next week, if I remember. I might just do something where I have a burial counter, and I count the number of performers that are buried on television each week. Because it feels like every week it's somebody else. You know? You had... Let's see here. Everyone was insulting everyone during this segment. Lawler continued to call Vicky fat, even though she's not, so Dolph tried to defend her. Jim Ross had his hat stolen and later defaced and stomped on by Dolph Ziggler. Nobody was calling any of the action in the ring during this match. You had Riley and Swagger in the ring trying their best. They're trying to have a decent match. Nobody gives a fuck about what's going on inside the ring. A complete insult. Complete slap in the face to these guys in the ring. I mean, can you imagine if these guys are wrestling and, God forbid, you know, Riley takes a bad bump and breaks his neck and gets paralyzed or something from the waist down? And we look back on this match and we think, God, you know, well, at least he had a great match and they were having a great match on TV. You know, kind of like when Steve Austin and Owen Hart were having a pretty damn good match at SummerSlam all those years ago when Owen botched the pile driver, Austin suffered a stinger. A horrible thing. It marred the match. But you know what? It was kind of a pivotal moment looking back in Austin's career. He didn't get paralyzed or anything, thankfully, but here's a match where it's a throwaway match on TV that nobody cares about anyway, and nobody, literally nobody on commentary, nobody is paying any attention to the match at all. How could you with everything that was going on? And God forbid, if something would have happened in this match, I can't think of a worse scenario. Imagine if you're the person who gets hurt and you're thinking, God, I broke my neck for this shit. So you have all of this stuff going on. Like I said, nobody's calling any of the action. Then came the finish. Oh, this was the best part. Swagger went for the Dr. Bomb, the gut wrench suplex finish. So he goes for the gut wrench, and nothing. Riley doesn't go up for him. So Swagger tries again, and nothing. He still can't get Riley up. So at this point, I literally buried my face in my hands. I'm sitting at home, okay? I don't have thousands of people watching me on TV, but yet I bury my face in my hands because I was so embarrassed for these guys. So finally, the third time he hits the move, gets the pin, I can only imagine the fit that Vince McMahon was throwing backstage at this point. I mean, I would pay $45 to see it in HD. I swear to God I would. This entire segment, from start to finish, was about as big of an epic fail as you are ever going to see on a wrestling show. And again, the match itself could have been halfway decent, I'm sure it was. I wouldn't know. Because I was so utterly distracted by the nonsense at ringside. And, you know, Ziggler, for his part, did fine. I thought Dolph, you know, he was looking good. He had a couple of, he got a couple of cracks in there. But it didn't matter. I mean, it was completely counterproductive to the match or whatever the hell. I don't even know what they were trying to accomplish. I guess they were trying to build heat between Dolph and Vicky. I don't know. I don't know exactly what the goal of this was other than it pissed me off royally. It royally pissed me off. But that wasn't the only one that pissed me off. Oh, no. Because the very next match on this fucking show, we get Evan Bourne and Kofi Kingston in a tag team match. And apparently they're going to be a team now, I guess. Beating David Otunga and Michael McGillicuddy. This might have been a good match. I honestly don't know. I was so distracted and infuriated yet again by the commentary during this match. The only thing I remember about it was Airborne at the finish. For the 1-2-3. That's it. I have absolutely no recollection of what happened before that. This sucked almost as badly as the last match. Cole buried Swagger on commentary for botching the finish earlier on, which was Vince backstage raving like a lunatic, I'm sure, into Cole's ear. Jerry Lawler actually referred to the tag team champions, in this match as, quote, the bland leading the bland, end quote. So there's two more burials for those of you who are keeping track. Cole buried Jim Ross a little bit more after that. Here's the thing. Each week we see commercials about WWE's anti-bullying campaign. And CM Punk alluded to the fact that he found it hypocritical for Vince McMahon to initiate such a campaign when he himself may be the biggest bully of all. Okay, that's all fine and good in storyline to mention that, but I am amazed they would even bring it up on TV because of how real it really is. I mean, let us recap here, okay? If I may for a second. Indulge me for a moment. In the last couple of months on WWE television, we have had the announcers mock Vicky Guerrero for being a fat pig, even after she lost over 50 pounds and really isn't that fat anymore. We've had those same announcers mock other divas as well. They called Natalya chunky. Remember that? We had them saying that the new thing for Cole now is to say that Kelly really isn't all that pretty, and she's just photoshopped, which may well be true. Not that Kelly isn't pretty, but again, why would you draw attention to the fact that, oh, she's not really that pretty, she's just photoshopped? So that's the new thing he's been doing. We've seen Michael Cole take every opportunity, even after their entertaining little angle on NXT ran its course, to bury Daniel Bryan, even after winning the Money in the Bank briefcase. And of course, we have the case of Jim Ross. Now, on Twitter, during Raw Monday night, I said, quote, Vince McMahon is a fucking man-child. Get over yourself, you big bully. Your act is old and stale. And there were a lot of people who tweeted and retweeted and said, oh, well, what are you talking about? Like, what are you referring to? They thought I was talking about something else. No, I was talking about Vince McMahon. You know, it's bad enough we have Michael Cole making fun of Jim Ross on television every week. Now we got Jerry Lawler in the act, too, which, again, I'm sure is Vince telling Lawler to poke him a little bit. We got Lawler, supposedly his best friend, not only in real life, but on television. You know, back in the day, Ross and Lawler used to needle each other all the time. You go back to 97, 98, it was actually very entertaining. JR and Lawler are not at their best these days. They were a lot better back in the day. And back then, there was tension, you know. Lawler was a heel. Jim Ross found him reprehensible. It was entertaining. And in the last several years, the dynamic has changed, really, for about a good decade now. They've been all buddy-buddy on television. So, what do all of these burials have in common? All the examples I just gave, including JR and they buried Melina too, but Melina was actually a bit of a whack job. What do they all have in common? Not a single one of them, of these burials, is helping WWE's business in any way. I mean, I thought I understood why they were having Cole bury Daniel Bryan at first. As hated as Cole is, the logic is that it would make people like Bryan even more. But in fact, the opposite is happening, as I talked about earlier with those boring chants at SummerSlam. So if that's the case, then you can't give me a single good reason why any of this makes any sense, which leads one to draw only one logical conclusion. Vince McMahon is a dick who gets his jollies at other people's expense. And he's always been that way to a degree, but now we all have to suffer through it on television every single week. And it's so mean-spirited, I actually feel sorry for a lot of these people. You know, Jim Ross is a big boy, 60 years old. You know, he's a big boy. He's been working with WWE Shop to sell his sauces and his products. I'm sure he makes a very nice living for himself. Okay? And yes, nothing is stopping him from spitting in Vince McMahon's face and quitting. But I still feel sorry for the guy because he loves this business too much to ever do anything like that. It's like that question I asked all of you a couple of weeks ago. If you had your dream job and you were completely miserable, would you have the guts to quit and walk away? Many of you said that you didn't think you would be able to do what Chavo Guerrero did or what Gail Kim did. Quite frankly, I don't know that I would either. So in the meantime, you've got Jim Ross. Here's a Hall of Fame announcer, okay? Maybe I'm not going to sit here and say that every single person listening to this show loves Jim Ross and thinks Jim Ross is the greatest of all time. Some of you may think Gordon Solie is if you're an older fan who goes back a number of years. Some of you may think Gorilla Monsoon is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Vince McMahon, what a wonderful announcer. Tony Schiavone, Michael Cole, okay? Everybody has a different opinion. By and large, most wrestling fans would agree Jim Ross, if not the best, certainly one of the best wrestling play-by-play announcers of all time. And I'm just thinking, I cannot think of another sport or entertainment form. And I may have mentioned this before, I'll say it again. I cannot think of another form of entertainment, sport, UFC, baseball, football, anything like that, where you have a respected Hall of Fame elder statesman of an announcer who is treated with such contempt and ridicule and disrespect on the air. It's not like all of these things are scripted into the shows and JR is signing off on them. He might sign off on some of them, you know. I don't know whether or not the whole thing with his hat on Monday night was in the script or if they just said, hey, let's fuck with him and take his hat. I don't know. But you can't tell me that all of this shit is scripted and he knows about it in advance. You know, he's all excited to go on the air and he's got all of his research and his papers prepared to go on the air for SummerSlam on Sunday and they yank him off the pay-per-view at the last minute. Just stupid shit like that. And you know what? Like I said, he's an adult, but he adds something to the broadcast. And I feel like since he's been back, and he's been back now a number of weeks, he's added very little of value to the show, and I don't blame him for that. It's not his fault. It's Michael Cole's fault. It's Vince McMahon's fault. It's Kevin Dunn's fault. They're the ones that are responsible for this. More so Vince and Dunn, because again, Cole is just doing what he's told. But Cole, he does such a great job that, you know what? As far as I'm concerned, he's every bit as responsible. If they let Ross do his thing, I'm not even saying, you know, make him the play-by-play guy, you know, fine. You want to keep Cole in that role, you want him to eventually get better and be the number one guy, fine. You can make a three-man announce booth work. But I feel like they brought Jim Ross back, and what was the point? I would almost hope that he either quits or they take him back off the road. Because it's not as though he's really adding anything of value to the shows that he's on. Because Vince McMahon is a dick. That's the only thing I got out of all of this. All the insults, all the burials to the women, to JR, to everybody. It just gets worse and worse and worse, and it's not making them any money. You know? If you're going to get something out of it, if it's all leading somewhere. Remember Michael Cole, when he first went off the rails and was doing his shtick at the beginning of the year, and it led to the match with Lawler at WrestleMania, and we all thought, okay, you know what? It was getting a little out of control, but maybe it's going somewhere. Maybe it's going to lead somewhere. Or Lawler will kick his ass at WrestleMania, and that'll be the end of it. And then it just went on, and it went on, and it went on, and it never stopped. And now it's August. It's August. And this shit's only getting worse. And it's hurting the product, and I don't even think they realize it. And I know I sound like a broken record complaining about the same things every single week, but you know what? I'm going to continue to bitch and piss and moan about the same bullshit every single week until they fix it. Because you had two matches on this show that could very well have been good to very good to great matches. I don't know. You had the tag match with Kofi and Evan. You had the Swagger Alex Riley match. I'm sure that match wasn't going to be anything overly special. But you had two matches on this show with six guys, and nobody gave a shit. Because how could anybody pay any attention to those matches? Forget the fact the announcers didn't call anything. How can we focus and pay attention to these matches when the goddamn announcers don't even think it's important enough to talk about? And I said this, I was talking to a friend of mine a little bit earlier, and I meant this when I said this, and I don't think this is an invention, quite frankly, that's too far off. I think at some point, hopefully, we'll have something like this. You know, WWE finally came into the 21st century. They were offering those radios at SummerSlam for the people who wanted to pay extra so they could listen to the commentary in the arena. And jokes on those people. If those people thought Jim Ross was going to be on commentary, I'd ask for a refund. But to me, if WWE was able to somehow technologically offer the option of watching their TV shows so we can hear the audience, so we can get the crowd noise, but turn the announcers off, I would absolutely do it. And I know a lot of people feel the same way. And that's a shame. You've had a lot of great announcers over the years. You know, you used to have announcers that actually added something to the broadcast. And I'm at the point now where I'm praying that one day this technology is invented. I'll pay extra for it. So I can hear all of the noise and the crowd pops and all of that stuff, but I don't want to hear the fucking announcers. That's how terrible they are. They completely detract from the product. That's how bad it's gotten. I used to think Don West and Mike Tenay in the early days of TNA on commentary just shouting for no reason, because Don West used to shout all the time. I love Don West. He got better over time as an announcer, so of course they ended up replacing him. But at first, he was pretty goddamn terrible. All he would do was shout, because that's all he used to do on the Home Shopping Network when he would pimp out his merchandise. He would shout, he would raise his voice, that's what he does. So he would shout and shout and shout, and Mike Tenay, who was always a very even-keeled, kind of low-key kind of guy, you know, you go back and during the days of WCW Monday Nitro, he was the professor, he was the third guy in the announce team on Nitro, he was very low-key, he would always have, you know, be prepared with information about the luchadors and everything. So Mike Tenay started to think, well, I got to compete with Don West here. This guy's screaming, so I have to start screaming. And so Mike Tenay started screaming, and Don West would scream, and I didn't know what the fuck was going on, and the announcing was horrible. And I never thought the day would come that I would actually be begging for Mike Tenay and Don West in the early days of TNA on commentary. I would gladly take the two of them right now over Michael Cole and anybody on WWE. Some other notes here. Big story broke today that UFC apparently has found a new home. I've talked about this recently, the likelihood of them leaving Spike TV when their contract expires at the end of the year. And it's looking more and more likely that UFC will be landing on Fox. Apparently they've reached a deal or are about to reach a deal with the Fox network that would have their programming shift over from Spike to the FX network early on in 2012. FX, a much stronger network than Spike is. And there could be up to 4 annual live specials on the Fox network, which would be huge for UFC. It would give them their biggest network television, broadcast television audience, certainly, that they've ever had. They've never had specials on any of the major networks like NBC, Fox, ABC. That would all change. Supposedly, the deal is for about 7 or 8 years and up to $90 million a year, which would be a ridiculously good deal for UFC. And in a way, you know, if they were going to have a couple of annual specials, you'd have to put some big stars on there. And it would take away, perhaps take away from their pay-per-view revenue. So it kind of makes sense, you know, to compensate for the potential loss of pay-per-view revenue that you would kick in some extra money. All of this right now is unconfirmed. Dana White, the president of the UFC, has said that this is not official. It will likely be made official very soon. This comes from the Sports Business Daily, which has a pretty good track record. So we'll see how this shakes out in the next couple of days. And if I do 175 this weekend, I'll have more on this story then, because this story has implications for wrestling as well, and in particular for TNA. Because when and if UFC leaves Spike at the end of the year, TNA and Impact Wrestling becomes the de facto number one property that Spike owns. And there's been some talk that perhaps Spike will be rebranding itself for the coming fall season, perhaps next year. You know, when they rebranded as Spike, they were the Network for Men. And they really, I don't think they've called themselves the Network for Men in quite some time, but they still are the Network for Men in that they, you know, they gear their programming towards that young 18 to, I think it's 18 to 49 male demographic. They don't exactly cater to the female demographic, and that might be changing. And if it does change, again, I think TNA is fine right now as far as their TV is concerned, but God, if they ever lost their TV with Spike, if Spike decides to go in a completely different direction, if, let's say, the head of Spike TV leaves and they bring in somebody new, just like when Jamie Kellner, a name that I'm sure some of you are familiar with, came into Turner Broadcasting back in 2001, and he hated pro wrestling. I mean, the man despised pro wrestling. He said, you know, he was the new guy, and he said, you know what, I don't want pro wrestling on our channels anymore, and that was it. Just like that, WCW is dead. If WCW would have kept their TV, Eric Bischoff probably would have bought them out. He would have run WCW. I mean, who knows at that point how many more years they could have gotten out of it. But if a similar situation here 10 years later were to unfold with TNA, where, and I'm just speculating, of course, but my point is, short of something like that happening where they bring in somebody new who doesn't like wrestling and they kick TNA off the network, I think they're pretty safe for now. I think UFC leaving actually helps their cause more than it hurts. We'll see how this shakes out in the next couple of days, and if we do have more on it, then I will talk more about this story on 175 this weekend. In the meantime, we have some more WWE news here before we get to one TNA story that pissed me off. Mike Chioda, the senior official referee, I guess, in WWE, was suspended. He was popped for a wellness policy violation, according to the blurb on WWE.com. They have suspended referee Mike Chioda for 30 days for his first violation of the company's policy. This is kind of odd. I think it's the first time that a referee has been suspended. I have no idea what he was suspended for. They did not mention it. And as part of their policy, I don't believe that they usually mention it. It may come out at some point. Chioda is very well liked. He's been in the company for a number of years. And when Earl Hebner was fired and disappeared from WWE and went over to TNA, Chioda became the by default almost, the senior referee there. Because Tim White, of course, has since been forced to retire because of the shoulder injury that he suffered many years ago. Jimmy Corderas, who actually participates in the Right After Wrestling show each week that is out there for those of you who listen. He used to be a WWE referee for, I think, well over 20 years. In fact, I know he goes back to at least the late 80s. And I don't remember if he quit. I believe he might have been cut. Might have been budget cuts a couple of years back. Whatever the reason was, Kyoto was the number one referee. He was the head official. Still is. I don't think they're getting rid of him. It's his first violation. 30 days, he'll be back. My gut tells me, and again, I'm completely speculating here, unless he has some sort of, maybe he has some sort of injury and he was taking pain medication that was not prescribed or was not cleared, unless it was something like that, it was probably a violation perhaps for marijuana. I was of the impression that marijuana infractions you were fined for and not suspended, but there was some sort of change made some months back to the policy where perhaps you might actually be suspended now for pot violations. I'm not 100% sure about that. I'll have to look into that. Could have been something as innocuous as that. Either way, very, very bizarre. Mike Kyoto, not the name I would have expected on the list. Another name that's been rumored, and I have not seen this confirmed, so I'm not, putting this out there as confirmation of anything. There's been a lot of speculation from different reputable wrestling websites that Big Andy Levine, the winner of the most recent season of WWE Tough Enough, has also been suspended or perhaps is in some sort of hot water for perhaps a wellness violation of his own. It might be a failed test. Last I heard, Andy was still down in FCW. I don't know if he's officially been suspended or not. There was no announcement made on WWE.com. Something interesting to keep in mind in the next couple of days in case they do make some sort of announcement. And you know what? If he did foul up somehow and did get popped or suspended, what an idiot. I mean, really, what an idiot. And you know that Luke Robinson is sitting somewhere, with this shit-eating grin on his face, with his hands, rubbing his hands together going, "See, I told you, he didn't have it." So, anyway, we'll see if there's anything to the story. It hasn't been confirmed, but I've heard it from a couple of different websites. The last thing I want to talk about here before I leave you involves TNA. I figure I'll save the best for last here. And as I said a little bit earlier on, I don't like picking on TNA, but they make it so damn easy. And in this case, we have Jimmy Yang, who of course was Jimmy Wang Yang in WWE, the Asian cowboy. So Jimmy Yang noted a couple of days ago, might have even been sometime early last week, on his Twitter page, that it has now been 7 weeks. Last week it was 6 weeks. Now it's officially been 7 weeks since he has appeared on Impact Wrestling. He appeared at one Impact Wrestling taping, and he has still not been paid. He said on Twitter, 7 weeks and still no check. Somebody called and said I was being unprofessional. Not paying somebody for a job is unprofessional, end quote. So basically what happened is he went on Twitter last week and said that it was 6 weeks, he hadn't been paid by TNA. Obviously, that pissed people off in TNA. They actually called this poor guy and said that he was being unprofessional by going public because he hadn't been paid for 6, now 7 weeks. Can you believe these people? I mean, the gall to call up somebody that hasn't been paid after almost 2 months and call them unprofessional? Brass balls on these fuckers. I mean, how much are we really talking about here? Let's be realistic. It can't be more than a couple of $100, if that. I mean, if that. Yang brought he brought this Elvis impersonator character back that he played this years earlier on TNA. And he wrestled, it was the June 27th edition of Impact Wrestling. He lost to Low Ki in the three-way match that also featured Matt Bentley. And I've ranted about TNA's appalling treatment of talent, in particular the knockouts. The Daphne story that I dedicated an episode to some time ago, that still makes me angry just thinking about it. And that's an episode worth going back and listening to. I don't remember what number episode it is. If you go back in the archives and check the listings, you'll find it. It was 160-something. It might have been 166. But the point is, it still pisses me off to think back to that story. But it's not as though the male performers in the company are all living like kings. Unless you're a top-flight main event star. The fact that Ric Flair can get away with the bullshit that he does, and he was actually brought back at the most recent set of tapings. He's got a match with Sting coming up, I believe, on pay-per-view soon. Speaks volumes about management in that company. But there was a report earlier in the year that even Flair was owed a great deal of money by management in TNA. In the Wrestling Observer, Dave Meltzer had talked about the fact that the company was, quote, bleeding money and they were perhaps as much as 4 to 6 months behind paying certain talents. 4 to 6 months. Can you believe that? It's just unacceptable. It's not as though the people who do these spots for TNA where they work a taping here and work a taping there can necessarily afford to go 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months without getting paid. They don't give a shit. Generation Me walked out on TNA recently because they felt they could make more money and have control over their bookings if they went back on the independent circuit. And interestingly enough, Generation Me just had a tryout yesterday in San Diego prior to the Raw tapings in front of some WWE agents, so they may be bound for greener pastures after all. Now, all of this flies in the face of another report. I have to mention this. There was at least one very reputable wrestling website that said for the first time in a long time, TNA was actually out of the red. They were no longer losing money. It's not like they're making boatloads of cash, but they're not losing money like they were before. And, you know, perhaps they've worked to cut costs. From what I've heard, they've gotten rid of some people recently in the front office and all that. That may well be true, but I have a very difficult time believing that when they still can't pay their talent. I mean, if Yang is to be believed, and I see no reason for this guy to lie about this. I mean, after all, why burn any bridges unnecessarily when there's already very few places to work in wrestling in this country and make decent money? Why would he make up a story like that? You know, when Paul Heyman was bouncing checks to talent in the original ECW, the writing was already on the wall. Ironically, they also had national TV with Spike, which at the time was known as TNN, but it didn't do them any good. You know, by 2001, that company was dead, and the parts were being sold at auction. Makes you wonder if history is bound to repeat itself here. I mean, let's all remember this. The next time TNA pays $15,000 to some D-level celebrity from the Jersey Shore, that's probably an insult to all of the D-level celebrities out there. I hear Kate Gosselin is out of a job now that her TV show is canceled. Bruce Pritchard is the one handling talent relations in TNA now that Terry Taylor is gone. He ought to get right on that. I mean, the woman has 8 kids. I'm sure Vince Russo is just salivating at the storyline possibilities there. They can do some sort of paternity angle where, you know, it's revealed that Ric Flair actually sired some of her kids, and they pay her scumbag ex-husband a shitload of money to bring him in for a match with Flair. Not on pay-per-view, of course, because TNA isn't interested in making their money back on these sorts of deals. No, they put the match on Impact so they can pop a 1.3 quarter hour if they're lucky. That's the ticket. Actually, what the hell am I saying? Eric Young just tweeted yesterday that he's going to be having a match on Impact in a couple of weeks with Scott Baio. Yes, Charles in Charge, ladies and gentlemen, is coming to Impact Wrestling. You know what? I'd actually be in favor of putting Charles in charge. Can't be any worse than having Dixie, Eric, or Hulk in charge. I think I'm going to stop there. My ire has been raised by all of these different issues. I actually did like the shows for the most part this week, but just a lot of things got on my nerves. I just felt like I had to get it all out, so we'll save the mailbag for the next episode, although I do want to mention, I promised him I would mention, we have Dave, who is one of our loyal listeners, who actually is listening in South Europe. He is in Croatia. Been a listener since episode 150, wanted to give him a shout-out. Hopefully all of our international listeners are listening right now. If you want to send an email to me, you can do so at thesolemonster@gmail.com. Email me your questions, comments, and anything like that, and I'll try to read it on the air. And to the people who have been sending me podcast questions through Facebook, I might try to answer you through Facebook, but again, if you're sending questions in for the mailbag, don't do that. Email me. And remember, it's The Solemn Monster, not Solemn Monster. It's thesolemnmonster@gmail.com. Twitter, of course, twitter.com/Solemn Monster. Did a lot of live blogging last night. A lot of happy thoughts and not so happy thoughts. So follow me on there if you're not already doing so. Facebook.com/TheSolemnMonster. We've gotten a whole bunch of new Facebook friends. So thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody who has friended me on there. Keep doing so. And subscribe in iTunes. And as far as, again, just to go back to Raw and everything that's been going on in WWE lately with Punk and Cena and Triple H and Nash, I hope that, you know, they've got a solid direction that they're going in here. You know, I like a mystery angle as much as the next person, but color me skeptical. You know, I'm not trying to be the one person who complains about everything, but the bottom line is WWE's track record of doing these mystery angles is not exactly stellar. I was thinking that a little bit earlier on. I think back to the Greater Power in 1999. A lot of people look back on the Greater Power angle now, you know, 11 or 12 years later, fondly. They think it was such a cool angle. It wasn't terrible, but I just remember watching that back then when I was younger thinking, man, what a letdown. You know, they made you think that the Greater Power was going to be anybody and everybody from WWE's past, and it turns out to be Vince McMahon. I just remember what a letdown that was. And then, of course, we had also the same year, ironically enough, we had Rikishi. Well, I guess it wasn't revealed until the year after, but they did the whole Survivor Series angle where Steve Austin got run over, and it was kind of a whodunit for the next, like, 8 or 9 months. And they didn't have a plan when they did that angle, which is probably eerily similar to the way they're doing things now. I don't know that they exactly know where they're going with the current storyline. They sure as hell didn't back then. And, you know, back then, they revealed Rikishi and, you know, I did it for The Rock. And it was just, give me a break. Not exactly a stellar conclusion to that angle as well. And then, you know, you fast forward to 07, the Vince McMahon limo explosion, and who knows where they were going to go with that ultimately, and then the whole Vince McMahon bastard son storyline, which was going to be Kennedy, and then it turned out to be Hornswoggle. All I'm saying is their track record is not exactly great with these types of angles, so fingers crossed, hopefully they know where they're going with it. I'll keep an open mind. There were parts of it I liked. There were parts of it I didn't. Kevin Nash. I still can't believe that. But hey, that's wrestling for you. We'll be back this weekend, hopefully, episode 175. And hopefully you all enjoy and appreciate this special bonus episode here. Don't expect this every week. I know it's kind of rare, 2 weeks in a row. But there was a lot going on. Episode 174 in the book. So until next time, be well. Stay safe. We'll see you right here next time on The Sound Off. Take it easy, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solar Monster sounds off on SEScoops.com.